Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The first Earth Day in 1970 kicked off 45 years of environmental advocacy as we know it, from lobbying for clean air and water to climate change. Today, we welcome one of the region's foremost environmental advocates, a man who has far more experience than most, both lobbying for and implementing environmental policy. Peter Iwanowicz is the executive director of Environmental Advocates of New York. He was formerly acting commissioner of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and became the very first head of the New York State Office of Climate Change. So in the true spirit of Earth Day, we will talk today about some of the environmental issues that face our region. We want to hear from you. What are you doing to recognize Earth Day, which should be every day? Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now, you can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can go to Facebook if you want, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. We have a Vox Pop wall post there. You can tweet us at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag Vox Pop. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, the number is 1-800-348-2551. Peter Iwanowicz, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Ray.
Busy day for you down at the Capitol, eh?
Yeah, it's always a busy day when you work on environmental issues, but today more so than others. We had a big news conference at 11 o'clock this morning where we had members from both the Senate and the Assembly in New York talking about environmental issues with a range of different environmental groups. And we've been having meetings with a lot of top state lawmakers here in New York to talk about the issues that are pressing for the day, but also to take some time to reflect on the success that we've had in the past 45 years worth of Earth Day in terms of environmental protection and public health safety protections.
One thing I didn't know until a few moments ago was that Environmental Advocates of New York actually predates Earth Day.
I'd like to say we gave birth to it, but I don't think that's actually accurate. But yeah, we were formed 46 years ago in 1969. Our leaders found at the time they were working on projects down in the Hudson River, Lower Hudson Valley area of New York. They were working out in Long Island. And they really felt like in Albany, the earth needed a lobbyist. So they created what was then known as Environmental Planning Lobby to essentially act as not only the earth's lobbyist in Albany, but also a group that would convene other organizations from across the state under an umbrella so we could all lobby together.
Do you think that by and large over these last 46 years you have been successful?
Well, the environmental movement in the last 45 years has been terribly successful. When you look at where things were in 1970, we didn't have an Environmental Protection Agency. We didn't have the Clean Water Act. We didn't have the Clean Air Act. There were rivers in the middle part of this country that would burst into flames. Air was so polluted that people would literally walk around with face masks to try to protect themselves. We didn't have electric cars 45 years ago. In fact, even 20 years ago, the auto industry was fighting us here in the Northeast to try to do electric cars. Now they seem like it's a big marketing effort by the car makers to produce electric cars. So we've come a long way. Are we done? Absolutely not. There's huge challenges that we face in front of us today that need to be tackled right away.
I mean, 45 years ago, you had lead in gasoline.
Exactly. And I look at my kids this morning around the breakfast table and think, that's why they're smarter than I am, because I grew up in an environment where we had lead and gasoline. That was a big success story of the Federal Clean Air Act. And a lot of people forget that was a Clean Air Act issue.
Now, when did that ban go into effect in New York?
It started in the late 70s into the mid-80s is when sort of lead was starting to phase out. And sort of by the end of the 80s, that's when it was done. You didn't have that choice of leaded or unleaded.
You've been in this game a long time. When did you know that this was your cause?
You know, it's funny. I've done a lot of work, and I've been at it for nearly a quarter of a century now, but I still feel like I'm a kid in this environment. I had the pleasure of, joining yesterday with former Assembly Member Pete Grannis and former Commissioner of NCOM Pete Grannis, and he was actually one of the first people who created the Earth Day movement in New York City, brought together the million people that marched in the streets. So me, I feel like I'm a kid in this thing, and it really was 25 years ago. I had taken a job with the American Lung Association here in Albany, working on public education and individual education, and they asked me to be their lobbyist. And in 1992, that fall, I decided I would start working on public policy. And right out of the gate, 1993 was a big year for the environment. We passed a lot of great statutes. The thing that I work really carefully on was the Clean Air Compliance Act that ushered in huge reductions in smokestack pollution. Talked about the electric car program. We were fighting with the auto industry in the mid-90s about whether they should abide by the California standards or not. Now we have a good relationship with the auto industry. As they produce cleaner and cleaner cars, you have a lot more hybrid cars, battery-powered cars, et cetera. That wasn't the case 20 years ago. They were fighting us tooth and nail and cleaning up their act.
We're joined today by Peter Iwanowicz. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551 on this Earth Day. Peter is Executive Director of Environmental Advocates of New York. But by all means, if you are not in New York, we want to hear from you. All of the issues discussed today are national, certainly affecting the Northeast in general. What's your focus going to be in the next year or 10?
Okay. Next year or 10, definitely climate change. When you talk about a regional issue or an international issue, getting serious action on climate change is what Environmental Advocates is going to spend an enormous amount of time and energy on. In New York, in Massachusetts, in Vermont, a lot of these states have come together around something called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Emissions Program. That is lowering carbon pollution from the power sector, and they're doing it jointly. So the Northeast region has been really leading on this effort, and it's time for the states once again to redouble their efforts when it comes to carbon pollution and to really drive forward policy that ensures that we get the type of pollution reductions we need and that our communities are more resilient to the impacts that are already happening due to the climate change.
It's one thing I would think to lobby lawmakers on issues like this. How do you get big business on board with some of these initiatives?
Well, I mean, the old adage is it's always hard to sort of convince mules. So you find the horses to run with, right? So you find companies that are more progressive, companies that are willing to embrace the fact that climate is changing and that their impacts are real and it's affecting their bottom line. And really find those companies to sort of move with on a positive agenda rather than trying to convince the deniers on climate change or others that are just too stubborn to sort of want to move. So we really try to find the progressive outliers in any kind of manufacturing industry or any kind of business situation that we can work with.
Let's go to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, thanks for waiting. You're first.
I'd like to comment on why the monitoring of infectious microorganisms in sewage and septic plants may not be effective. The most common organism monitored is fecal coliforms, otherwise known as Escherichia coli. This does not form cysts or spores, which are protective mechanisms. To detect it in raw sewage, this may be appropriate. But the coliforms will probably be killed off by disinfection in treatment plants where cyst formers like Giardia and Cryptosporidium and spore formers like Clostridium and Pastorella may not.
Jim, do you have a question?
Well, that was basically it.
Okay, well, listen, we appreciate the call. Thanks very much. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Jim in West Shokan. Jim, you're on.
Hi, yeah. I wanted to ask about the use of the glyphosate, the herbicide. New York City and the New York State DOT spray that stuff around New York City reservoirs. I'm down here in the town of Olive around the Ashokan Reservoir. They do it every year in June, and I'm just wondering how much of a danger that presents to people whose wells are near it and whose, you know, the tributaries to the reservoir in New York City.
Well, it's a big problem, actually. In fact, one of the issues that we're working on is the whole issue of genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered plants and food, actually. We're trying to get a bill done in Albany and other states. We're trying to do it to get labeling. And one of the big issues is that a lot of these crops have been engineered to be resistant to that particular pesticide, which is commonly known as Roundup. And it's used in a lot of different instances. It has a wonderful effect of doing what it's supposed to do. It kills stuff. World Health Organization has actually labeled it as a probable human carcinogen. So we'd like to see more labeling so that consumers can make more effective and clear choices about the food they're eating and whether it's genetically engineered. But I think more people should be educated on that particular pesticide and what it means to public health and the environment. And that latest finding over the last couple of weeks from the World Health Organization is troubling. The fact that this is being used by government agencies, is being used in our food supply is a troubling new development. So folks should be really reading up on the latest findings with that particular pesticide that, again, goes by that trade name Roundup.
Yeah, well, every year we have, in the town of Olive, we've sent letters to New York State DOT, New York City DEP, and we've gotten replies, many letters replying that the EPA approves this stuff and it's totally safe. And we're having another town meeting, in the first town meeting, the second Tuesday in May, and we've invited those officials to come and speak to the town on the use of this.
Yeah, well, they should be pressed to sort of explain sort of how they think it's safe that the World Health Organization has raised such significant questions.
Okay, well, I hope people come out to the meeting, and I hope they can get informed. Thank you.
Jim, thanks a lot. You know, listening to Jim's question and your answer, it occurs to me that lobbying is certainly one aspect of what you do, but education is another. So when you have institutions and governments using something like that, it's one thing to say this has to stop, but how important is it just to get the everyday person in the neighborhood to understand the issues?
Well, I think it's critically important. You know, I say this to my staff a lot, that the base of the environmental movement on the best day is about 18% of the general public. We really need to go well beyond the base to talk to the average individual and engage them in a conversation about, you know, the opportunities for getting active on climate. When we look at climate change here in the Northeast, we see the extreme weather events. We feel a lot of the impacts of a changing climate. But one of the pieces that we get sort of lost in the mix is the tremendous economic development potential of just shifting to cleaner energy. Solar, wind, just doing energy efficiency in your home can reap huge economic benefits. For every dollar you spend on energy efficiency, you get $3 back in energy cost savings. You tackle this issue because of climate change, but it also becomes a huge discussion that you have with the general public about how wasteful our practices are in energy and that simple measures can really reduce waste.
Peter Iwanowitz is our guest. Let's take a break, Mr. Zach the Engineer. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be back on this Earth Deck.
Support for WMC comes from Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design featuring Cambria quartz countertops, Murillette cabinetry, and more. Designer consultations available, curtislumber.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment, berkshire.coop. Curran Compliance Services, Greenwich, New York, compliance and regulatory consultants for life insurance and annuity carriers and their distribution partners, currencompliance.com. And Empire State Youth Orchestra, performing Grieg, Hindemith, Berlioz, and Rosaro's Marimba Concerto at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall this Saturday, 7:30 p.m. ESYO.org for more information.
One 800 348 2551 is the telephone number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Peter Iwanowitz, Executive Director of Environmental Advocates of New York. And let's go over to Ann in Adams, Mass. Hi, Ann, you're on.
Oh, hi. I have a question for you all. You know, I was in Holland not too long ago, and there's an entire town that is heated by this great big building that's the incinerator. It's where all the trash goes. And from that, somehow they heat the entire town. It was amazing. And I don't understand why we can't do something like that here.
It's probably one of those situations where in the Netherlands where they have district heating. How big was the town, Ann, just if you don't mind me asking a question back? What was the population?
Well, it wasn't big. I mean, I wish I could remember the name of it. I could Google it, but it was not big. It was probably, well, I live in Adams, Mass. It was probably about as big as Adams, Mass.
Yeah.
And but
so the first
it was ingenious.
Yeah, the first things I've done is that in the Netherlands they have something called comprehensive green planning, where they really try to take a comprehensive view of it. It's also a country that has no space that's not been touched by humans, either by agriculture or industry. So they have a deep appreciation for it. The biggest thing with garbage burning that you always have to be concerned about is the emissions coming out of the stack can be quite toxic based on the feed source. And if you divert the material that can be truly recycled, if you divert things like yard waste and composting, incinerator is no cleaner than coal. So really what you have to think about is communities coming together, and Massachusetts is doing a great job. I grew up just outside of Boston. I traveled to the Berkshires often. Massachusetts is doing a tremendous amount of work in putting solar, photovoltaic, solar thermal panels in a lot of homes. Now seeing it sort of crop up on on the side of the Mass Pike, closer into Boston, but in the exit ramp areas of that green space that sits there, they're now building solar into it. And that's the type of thing that I think is probably more beneficial. You want to move away from things that have combustion. We can't burn our way into a future without climate change. We really need to produce it with energy that has no smokestack attached with it.
Well, can I just say, first of all, there was no smell. I was shocked. There was no smell that came out of the thing. Maybe there were other bad things, but, you know, they're pretty good about that in Holland. And speaking of solar, I just had the amazing thing. I joined a community solar program because I cannot put panels on my house, but there's a community program that I could tap into. So I was so excited about that.
Yeah, good. Well, that's good. And just remember this, that carbon monoxide is colorless and odorless, but too much of it can kill you.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Peter Iwanowitz is our guest. Solar and net metering. Where do you guys, as environmental advocates, where do you lobby that? Eventually, we will reach that point where it is net metering. We are at the edge of that.
Well,
in Massachusetts, specifically.
In terms of like how much net metering you can actually do?
How much is allowed? Yeah. In other words, how much expansion the solar industry and the residential solar programs can send power back into the grid?
Well, I mean, we really think it's a tremendous way to go forward. If you're serious about tackling climate change, I mean, here's what, the percentage reduction, where a lot of people talk about an 80% cut in greenhouse gas emissions by mid-century. When you really analyze that and what that means completely electrically powered building systems. So no furnace in the basement anymore, no natural gas furnace or oil. And the transportation sector is all electrically powered, so all battery-powered vehicles. And the electricity to be used by those sectors, all carbon-free. That's the magnitude of what an 80% cut in
can it be done,
gas.
Though?
Oh, certainly. Do we have the political will to make a real conscious shift away from fossil fuels to these cleaner energy sources? And are governments willing to put the tax dollars into it and the real oomph behind it? And that's where we've seen that lack of political will to take on that challenge. A lot of people talk about it, and a lot of states have an 80-by-50 commitment in the region, but what you don't have is that leadership to say, and we're going to get there.
It seems to me that industry would be all over this once the profit is enough. How do you get to that point where it is becoming profitable enough for the businesses to say, hey, we have no choice. This is the way to go.
Yeah, two things, Ray. You got to take away the subsidies, massive subsidies this country gives to fossil fuel industries, particularly oil. They have massive amounts of tax subsidies, billions of dollars every year. You got to take away those. The second thing is we do need a fair price put on carbon pollution. Some people call it a carbon tax, but we really need to price the pollution that's generated by big industry and what we do fairly. And if we do that, then you'll see the economics sort of change in the favor. Until we have the political will to do that, we will always be tinkering on the margins, and people will say it's not cost competitive to fossil fuels.
Our guest today is Medical Monday. Peter Iwanowitz is the executive director of Environmental Advocates of New York. Back to the phones we go. And Jim in North Pownell, is that Jim?
That's me.
You're on, man.
Hey. I just want to throw my hat into the anti-glyphosate ring. Roundup is one of the biggest lies that's ever been perpetrated on the American people by Monsanto. It is not safe. It is not healthy. It is bad news stuff, and yet it's being used everywhere, and it's unreal.
Okay. You got a question for Peter?
No, I don't. I just want to stand behind him in his opinion of what glyphosate is like and what Roundup is. And believe it or not, there is an online petition going around the state of Vermont right now to ban the use of glyphosate in Vermont. And I just signed it yesterday morning when I was online.
Well, thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call.
Okay.
Yep, have a good one. 1-800-348-2551. I noticed on your website, microbeads are on your radar at this time.
Yeah. Big, small little tiny plastic, but big problem.
Yeah.
This is the...
How big of a problem?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, billions of gallons of this stuff that passes through wastewater treatment plants in the Northeast and end up in the Great Lakes. They end up in, you know, water bodies all across the region, really. I mean, anywhere we're going to use this product, wastewater treatment facilities don't filter it out. So it's plastic that's in your personal care products, and nobody's going to get better looking by scrubbing plastic against their face or exfoliating with it. Mm. There are natural products that are out there that aren't plastic that do biograde, or at least they're naturally formed. But it's a big problem. Plastic ends up in our waterways. Fish consume it. Plastics in fish is always going to increase the toxicity, and people get sick if they eat those fish. So it's a big problem that needs to be dealt with. And there's legislation that's moving not only here in New York but elsewhere to ban them, so that personal care products would not be allowed to have them, or you couldn't sell them in the region. And that's something that we're strongly backing, not in New York, but really it should be a national ban.
And in New York, is it? It's a one-house deal right now, right?
Well, there are bills in both houses of the legislature, and there was a lot of talk today at the news conference. The Republicans in the Senate and the Democrats in the Assembly are trying to get together, literally in the midst of a news conference, to try to, you know, find some common ground language that they can get together on. I think that's one of these issues where, you know, if you want to bring together a bipartisan sort of push on an issue, there's plenty of room to figure that out in between now and the end of June, when in New York State, that's when the legislature ends.
Peter Iwanowicz is our guest. Let's go back to the phones on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Ann in Stockbridge. Ann, you're on. Hello, Ann. Is anybody there? No, Ann's gone. All right. Well, let's go over to line 3, and Dave in Schenectady. Dave, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'd like to ask if Peter can give me a little bit more information about why Roundup is bad. Here's what I've heard. I've heard that it's much better than most of the other pesticides and herbicides that are out there, and that when the rain falls on these plants where it's been sprayed, that it just goes into the ground and it dissolves and becomes inert. Is that correct or is that incorrect?
Well, the big problem with the pesticide that's known by the trade name Roundup is it's encouraging massive use of the product because the plants are engineered to be resistant to it, so they don't have to worry about targeted spraying. So it removes the incentives for things like integrated pest management, or removes the incentives for farmers to go to organic. And enormous quantities of anything are going to overwhelm any kind of natural system. And particularly with the World Health Organization now labeling it as a possible human carcinogen, we shouldn't be sort of, you know, figuring out ways to put more of this into the environment. We should really be backing it out.
So here's the other argument I've heard in favor of it, and that is that by using it, farmers do not need to plow nearly as much, or they don't need to weed as much. So in other words, there's a lot less pollution going into the atmosphere from tractors that are dragging the various pieces of equipment across the field. And so... Does that factor in as well as, I mean, we're talking about, you know, a host of evils here, but is there any way that, you know, one can counterbalance another?
Well, one of the things that's unfortunate with the overuse is now you're starting to get weeds that are resistant to this particular herbicide, and farmers are now turning to other ones that have been since sort of determined as too toxic. So the whole argument that, well, this is better than the other stuff, so let's create Roundup sort of ready crops so we can spray a lot of it, and now you're moving into plants that are now resistant to it, weeds that are resistant to it, you're sort of getting into an odd cycle here. So farmers are going back to some of the old pesticides that we already sort of discarded because of the danger value there. So, you know, it's a situation where we thought we could tinker our way out of Mother Nature, but Mother Nature, as we all know, finds a way.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Sue in Boston Spa. Sue.
Hi. I have, I'm in a suburban area. We all seem to use pesticides and so forth. But my question is, I have a tremendous number of trees. I've had the ash borer, which is over and done with. But how do you decide? I have my trees sprayed. It's obviously a pesticide. I want to keep the trees, and I have like a little forest on one side. How do you decide? I have a company that's pretty good in the area, but how do you decide between spraying, getting rid of whatever, and keeping your trees and the danger of spraying?
It's a gardening show question.
It is. I wish I was more well-versed in it. If you're here in New York, I would really strongly suggest talking to folks at Cornell Cooperative Extension. They're a great resource in sort of making a good determination on those types of questions. I wish I could help you.
But that's the environment. It's the same thing as Roundup going into the ground.
Well, exactly, and you sort of have to weigh, are the trees distressed in such a way? Is there something that can be done other than, spraying huge amounts of, pesticides to sort of stop pests?
Okay.
Sue, why don't you give a call? We'll have the gardening show in the next week or two, and those guys, we have an arborist on board. He might be able to help you with that.
Yeah, I've gone to the Arboretum, and they're great.
Okay.
Landis.
Yep, that's our guy. He's on the show.
Oh, is it?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, he's on every time. Yep, thanks
okay.
a lot. Bye now. Over to Larry in Copaic. Larry, you're on.
Yes. Peter, you earlier mentioned the word carbon tax, and I'm a member of the local Citizens Climate Lobby, which is both a local, state, and national organization, and we're not advocating for a tax, but rather we're asking for a fee on fossil fuels at the point of entry into the market. And then a dividend where that fee then gets redistributed back to the populace.
Yep.
Understanding that prices will go up to some extent but returning that fee to the populace, that will alleviate that problem. So I just wanted to add that. And I think the work of the Citizens Climate Lobby is on the right track.
Yep.
Thanks,
and
Peter.
It's a good bill by Congressman Chris Van Hollen out of Maryland that's advancing that nationally. I mean,
what's
really,
the
point really is to set a penalty on pollution of carbon. It can be done by a fee on importation. Some people would look at it as also a tax. But the idea really is to ensure that those that are belching out carbon pollution pay a penalty.
But then if you're paying a fee as it enters the market, then the prices go up, the consumers pay more for that, and then they get it back? It doesn't seem to be a sensible sort of solution to anything.
Well, it depends on how you structure the dividend. That's why the conversation gets, very complex very quickly. But it depends on how the dividend is structured and how much actually goes back. The real idea is if you don't want to have to absorb the cost of the fee, you become more energy efficient. You drive less. You take more mass transit. The dividend keeps coming to you regardless of how much your consumption is. So people that consume a lot get penalized more than those that don't. And
Peter,
the dividend is, sort of spread across, in a more systematic way.
Peter Iwanowitz is our guest. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Steve in Kingston. Steve.
Hi there. I've been thinking about buying a hybrid car, but then somebody tells me that the batteries are produced in third world countries or China, which is very dangerous for the workers producing them. And then we have to use carbon to charge them up. Are they really in balance, good for the environment?
Short answer is yes. I mean, this has been looked at for over 20 years right now, in the Northeast in particular, looking at our electric grid here. It's a heck of a lot easier to reduce the pollution that's belched out by smokestacks than control individual tailpipes on a one-by-one-by-one basis. And remember, an internal combustion car, the cleanest it is the day it comes off the assembly line. The parts degrade, the engine degrades over time. So actually, the typical gasoline-powered car gets dirtier and dirtier over time, whereas hybrids or pure battery electric cars get cleaner and cleaner as we have more solar, more wind, less coal, less fossil energy coming from electricity. In terms of the batteries where they're produced, that can be a big difference in terms of the overall life cycle emissions. But really think about that first concept of the electric car gets cleaner and cleaner over time, where its counterpart gets dirtier and dirtier.
But isn't the carbon footprint of creating the batteries significant?
Well, I mean, if you start to weigh in sort of upstream emissions of extracting oil, shipping it massive oil tankers overseas. In the Northeast, we have an enormous problem with the oil trains, the economic risk, the environmental risk, all associated with that, not to mention the carbon footprint of that oil traveling from the middle part of the U.S. through the Northeast and then out overseas to be refined and then to come back to us. So when you add it all up, battery-powered electric cars, hybrids, with their increased efficiency is a winner for the environment.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Anna in Altamont. Anna, you're on.
Yes, I have a question relating to Roundup once again. So I purchased quite a bit of it last season, intending to get rid of a few things that have been unwelcome in my garden. And now I understand that, you know, it's not what I thought it was. So here's the question. Do I just use up what I have and not buy any more, or do I turn it into someone who will dispose of it? And if I do that, how will it be disposed? Where will all of that go?
So a lot of communities in the Northeast, my hometown here outside of Albany, Bethlehem, New York, has these days, their, you know, household recycling days where you can bring old paints and old pesticides and stuff like this to those, and they're recycled by companies that are set up to do this type of collection of old chemicals and old paints and old resins and hazardous waste collection days.
Mm.
I would save it and bring it to one of those when one pops up, and they're becoming more frequent.
Great plan.
But my question is, what do they do with it? Where does it go?
You know, I wish I knew the answer. I don't know. A lot of it turn it into remanufacturing. Some of it may go to hazardous waste landfills or hazardous waste incinerators. So there's different places it goes to depending on where.
Anna, thanks a lot so much for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. On this Earth Day, we are joined by Peter Iwanowitz, Executive Director of Environmental Advocates of New York. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience specializing in the greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new. 845-901-6129. Schenectady County Historical Society, featuring research library and museum with interactive exhibits, talks, walking tours, and events for adults and children, schenectadyhistorical.org. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, connecting food, farm, and community, organically grown CSA shares, now available for the 2015 season, farmproject.org. And Hubbard Hall, Center for the Arts and Education Theater, Cambridge, New York, presenting An Iliad, weekends April 24th through May 17th, hubbardhall.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-3—that's our fund drive number. You know, well, we had a fund drive meeting, and now I'm thinking about the fund drive. Not yet. 1-800-348-2551 is the Vox Pop number. Keep your head in the game, Ray. Let's go over to Akasha in Ashfield, Mass. You're on.
Hi. Thank you both for being there and all that you do.
Thank you.
I have, sorry, another question about Roundup.
Oh, boy.
I've been involved in the cleanup and also fight for rivers out in northwest Massachusetts, and we have a huge problem with invasive species like Japanese knotwood or knotweed, and it's really prolific, and it's literally choking out the rivers, which chokes out the microorganisms and the fish because there's no little eddies to go in, and they don't know how to combat it. They've tried everything, and some environmental organizations are just, you know, kind of throwing up their hands because they don't. My question is there any alternative for something like that? Because you can't just yank it out. You have to get it at the very beginning and put a metal, like, thin shield around a circle of all the roots. And get, you know what I mean? And at this point, that's impossible.
Yeah, I would always be. I mean, the short answer to your question is I'm not sure if that's the only way to do it. I would always be leery of chemical treatment in water bodies because.
Yeah, I won't do it.
Hydrology sort of will take that chemical elsewhere pretty quickly, and who knows where it sort of ends up. But I mean, I think the issue also raises just sort of invasive species in general and why. In New York and other states, and I'm not sure what's happening in Northwest Massachusetts, but I hope they're spending a lot of time and energy sort of developing strategies to combat invasive species before they get into water bodies, because that's the easiest thing.
They are, and they're trying to involve the community, and Massachusetts does have a great citizen community. Is there a place that you can suggest, and then I'll let you go? Just, I'm trying to find information to bring to them, because I respect these organizations and have worked with them. Would like to bring information of alternatives, and I can't find any websites that are giving me any information, and I just want to pick your brain about it.
Well, I would just real quickly suggest, and being a little bit parochial, but New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has an invasive species task force, and they may, may. It's been a while, so you might want to hit the DEC website, which probably is DEC.ny.gov, probably.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a good day.
Likewise.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Charlie in Amherst, Mass. Charlie, you're on.
Oh, wow. Well, first of all, I'm going to be as brief as I can, but what does Vox Pop mean?
It's Latin, I believe. Vox Populi, right? The voice of the people, I believe.
Oh.
All right, man.
How do you spell that?
Oh,
Ian?
For Pete's sake. V-O-X-P-O-P-U-L-I, I think.
Okay. All right. We'll go from there. Our dear sir, who is your guest today, mentioned coal about regarding a production of something that could help fuel, more environmentally friendly cars and whatever. And I thought, coal? You're kidding me. And about the Roundup.
Hang on, you were talking about coal-driven cars, Peter? I didn't hear that one.
No, I was saying that electric cars are going to be cleaner over time as we phase out coal, as particularly in the Northeast, and we move away from those dirty fuels. The electric car gets cleaner and cleaner over time as the electricity grid gets cleaner and cleaner. So no coal cars. No, either I misspoke or
maybe I misheard.
That's cool.
Listen, what my real question is, and when it comes to water treatment plants, antibiotics and all the other drugs. I mean, I take about 3 aspirins a month or something. I don't know anything about these over-the-counter drugs, but I understand that the water treatment system can't really filter out the poisons from them.
Drugs in the water. Good point.
Indeed. A great point. And it actually raises the larger question of just the lack of funding that we have for aging wastewater infrastructure. There's a lot of new standards that come into place. In New York State, they've identified a need of $36 billion over the next 20 years, need to improve fixing our pipes. It's a huge problem.
Charlie, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Joel in Clintondale, New York. Joel, you're on.
Hi there. I wonder, are you aware there's a green nuclear energy technology? It's called the liquid fluoride thorium reactor. Developed years ago, the DOD puts it aside because it did not produce plutonium. But by design, it does not melt down or explode, produces relatively little radioactive waste with a half-life of only about 300 years. In addition, thorium is less expensive than uranium, and to top it off, the reactors can use spent plutonium or uranium fuel rods as fuel, and which would save a lot of money rather than turning the uranium fuel rods into glass.
Do you have a question?
Well, I guess two quick, sort of reactions to it. I guess I always find myself in legion with the late, great Barry Commoner, who sort of always said that nuclear energy is a real toxic way to boil water. The other question is, with any sort of, situation like that, it's radioactive waste. It's got to be stored somewhere. Somebody's going to make a decision where they want to have it.
The radioactive waste is very, very limited, and these reactors can get rid of the massive waste we already have.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call, Joel. Let's go to Carol in Marbletown. Carol.
Hi.
Hi.
From the micro level, I have to replace my home heating system, my furnace, and I'm wondering what the environmentally sound options might be.
Well, what choices are available to you? Have you researched solar thermal, geothermal, other natural gas lines in your community? I mean, what are you on now, and where do you want to go?
I'm on oil, and I'm advised to go to propane.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not think natural gas is available to us.
Well, I mean, one of the things you can do is really sort of examine, are there incentives that are out there where you can move towards solar thermal? We have put solar panels on the roof to provide hot water to reduce the amount of a fossil fuel combustion you would need for a furnace. But the nice thing about it is technology continues to advance, and they make highly efficient furnaces where you're getting enormous efficiency ratings and you're using very, very little. So if you combine that, if there's an incentive for solar thermal, I'd explore that.
Okay.
Okay.
Carol, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.
Albany County recently enacted an ordinance blocking fracking waste at the landfill.
That's correct, yeah.
Kind of a trailblazing bit of legislation. As I understand it, no fracking waste was designated to go there. How significant is that piece of legislation?
Well, my organization looked in New York State and found that, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of tons of fracking waste are coming across the border into landfills in certain areas of New York, western New York and on the southern tier. We have decided as a state under Governor Cuomo's leadership to ban fracking, but we still allow for the waste to be deposited in our landfills. It has a potential to contaminate wastewater. It has a potential to create later radioactive leachate that then, you know, becomes a problem that we have to deal with. So Albany County really is thinking ahead and saying, let's enact a ban so that this never becomes a situation for our community. Ideally, the governor would direct the DEC to ban this practice statewide. But at least here in Albany County, legislator Brian Clenahan had the foresight and brought together a bunch of different members to do this. And I'm hoping that County Executive McCoy signs it into law.
Peter Iwanowitz is our guest today. Vox Pop is the program. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Bill in Gilderland. Bill.
Yes. Thank you both for what you're doing, especially your service, Peter. Toyota came out with the fuel cell cars not that long. Actually, I think they're out this year. Have you ever heard of anyone going to the point of where solar in a residence could generate hydrogen to fuel the cars, so you can do away with the gas stations, if you will, altogether, or fueling stations altogether?
Yeah, I mean, the real nut, obviously, with fuel cells is you need the hydrogen as a fuel source. You got to generate it somewhere. Do you generate it by, electrolysis, so you extract the hydrogen from water or not? It's been a question that's been sort of out there for 20 years, and everybody says we're getting closer and closer to fuel cells, but I've been hearing that we're getting closer and closer for 20 years. Ideally, I'm with you. I think it's the sort of way to go to generate the electricity for electric cars. And we have to sort of contemplate the toxicity of batteries, but not enough money is going into the research to perfect that technology.
Now, Plug Power was so in the news when they began, and what's the state of the art now with fuel cells?
Well, I mean, they're finding good niche applications. Plug Power is doing a tremendous amount of work internally with fuel cells and forklifts, so they're finding applications where you can back out fossil fuel combustion from health and safety reasons to other markets. So they're making a go of it in that space, which is important.
Let's go to Rupert in Red Hook. Rupert.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for hosting this. My question for you is, where are you volunteering on May 9th for the Riverkeeper sweep?
Personally, me?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to actually be in the legislature volunteering and working.
Bummer. Well, everyone should know that over 100-plus sites all along the Hudson River, this is the fourth annual cleanup of the Hudson River and its tributaries. So it's an amazing event, and too bad you can't go, but other people should know about it.
Well, listen, do me a favor. Don't tell Paul Gallet, the ex-executive director of my good friend at Riverkeeper, and we've been working on clean water issues a lot this year together. don't tell him I'm not going to be able to make his event.
All right. Rupert,
but rest
thanks.
Assured that I'm working in my capacity in Albany to sweep up the Hudson River and to block Governor Cuomo's desire to sort of take money away from river cleanup and dedicate it to the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Here's one that came, Peter, via email. This is from Stu in Poughkeepsie, I believe. Was wondering how come there's not a lot of attention, a lot of mention, I should say, of public transit. I'm one of the biggest advocates for public mass transit and don't drive. And when I went to visit my two brothers in Atlanta, Georgia, I took the Crescent down and enjoyed the train better than taking the overnight bus. Why not more public transit?
Well, I mean, it's just, again, you know, we need political leaders to fund it and really support it and get behind it. And we need the general public clamoring for more of it. I think we've seen in periods where you have high gasoline prices, more people sort of flocking to mass transit. And I don't think ridership peels all the way back, but it does peel back. And I think it's a great point. It's a much more efficient way to get between point A and point B. And if we had more of that, we'd really dramatically lower our carbon footprint.
Let's go to Eileen in Chester. Eileen, you're on with Peter Iwanowitz.
Hello. My question is about solar panels. We've had a number of companies call the house, you know, offering to put solar panels on the roof. And invariably, we give them the details about the house, or they look at it, you know, from the internet looking down, and we've told we have too many trees on the property. It's not cost-effective for them to take the trees down, which is not my first choice anyway. But I'm wondering if there is, because supposedly this is all grant money that is being used to by these companies to put the solar panels on. I am wondering, as an individual, if there is grant money available, because the other question is, then those solar panels are not owned by me, they're owned by the company. And what, you know, where as an individual should I turn? Because we've been approached several times and we get through the process and then they tell us it's not, you know, it's not cost effective for them to do that.
Okay. Well, I mean, it sounds like you've done a lot of research already, but if you haven't been to the website that New York State has on this issue, NY Sun, or if you Google
NY Sun,
okay. It's sort of where the repository is for all the state's programs to incentivize solar. There may be more background information on that website about that issue, and certainly, you know, it's more of a connecting with sort of the subsidies that are out there for folks like yourself.
Okay. But there are subsidies for individuals?
In terms of, you know, putting photovoltaics on your home, yes. And okay. You're right in saying that the companies that are out there really are all about just simply looking for square footage to put their product
yeah.
up. It's really no cost to the consumer anymore.
Eileen, you should check out, we did a show on solar energy a couple of weeks ago on Vox Pop. If you go to our WAMC website, WAMC.org, and go to the Vox Pop page, we discussed this at length with many callers. I think you'll find it interesting.
Okay.
Thanks, Eileen. Over to Gordon in Poughkeepsie. Gordon.
Yes. My question was, why is the United States so far behind in development of, like, solar or wind renewable energy as opposed to, like, Germany, which I think is half the nation is powered by solar, I believe. But why is there such a resistance in this country?
My firm belief is big oil. I mean, I talked earlier in the show about the billions of dollars in tax breaks and subsidies that we give to big oil in this country. Big oil interests spent $750 million in the last electoral cycle to install a Congress that first and foremost tries to vote for the Keystone XL pipeline. This week they're taking up legislation that would block EPA's efforts to set the carbon pollution standards for power plants. Essentially, EPA would like to do what the Northeast did 8 years ago by enacting the regional greenhouse gas emission standard nationwide. And fossil fuel interests, including big oil, block that because they know if EPA gets its way with electricity plants, oil refineries and the whole oil system is going to happen next. So they really fight tooth and nail to block progress on this, water down incentives, and curtail our massive amounts of development of the fossil, the renewable energy industry.
All right, Gordon, thanks a lot. In the minute or two we have left, let me ask you a philosophical question, Peter.
Uh-oh.
Which poses, in your mind, a bigger danger, assuming we need fossil fuels at this time? Pipeline, oil train?
Pipelines have probably been safer over time, but I would like to think we could go beyond the sort of discussion of the lesser of two evils. Oil trains obviously are built on aging networks. You know, the oil that is in the cars right now is dangerous. The cars themselves that are dangerous. Here in the Northeast, we have tremendous risk from the dirty and dangerous oil that's in these trains and no reward. It's not like we have huge economic benefits, a lot of refineries in the Northeast. So, you know, I hope we can get past that sort of like, you know, which are the more evil choice that we have to deal with.
I understand.
But the oil trains issue is really enormous, and it really... the opportunity for a catastrophic event is greater there.
Well, this has been an interesting program, and I hope you come back again soon. Peter Iwanowitz, Executive Director of Environmental Advocates of New York. You're going to go back to the Capitol tomorrow? And
I'm going to go back to the Capitol in the next half hour.
Are you really?
Yeah. Session's on. There's debates happening in Albany, and I'm sure they're probably happening in other capitals around the region as well.
Tell them I said hello.
I will.
Nice to have
you
here.
Thanks, Ray.
Support comes from Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild offering environmental outdoor education and living history programs for schools. AshokanCenter.org. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors. Serving the Northeast since 2001, stonesoupconcrete.com, and on Facebook. Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionxleyecare.com. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Peter Iwanowitz. Thank you all for calling in. Thanks to the great Zach Greeny Malloy, our engineer. Phones were answered by Bruce Herbach today. We really appreciate you being here. Remember, you can hear this show again at wamc.org/voxpop. And tomorrow, another exciting program. Stay tuned now for a news update.